Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
This is Steve Downs, the voice of Master Chief, Sierra 117, and you're listening to Podcast Unlocked, the world's number one Xbox podcast. Now, finish this fight. Master Chief, out.
What's happening, friends? Welcome to Podcast Unlocked, episode 550 for June 28th, 2022. 2022 is half over already. That is crazy to think about. But here we are. I'm Ryan McCaffrey, joined by my usual panel. Miranda Sanchez, hello.
Hi, hello. Welcome, everyone.
Bella Chung, how are you? Welcome back.
I'm good. I'm on medication. I'm here. Destin can't get rid of me that easily.
Not. He cannot. Destin is here.
Are you implying I poisoned you either. Or something?
Destin, you tried to. You actually did try to kill me, though. Like, one time I was in a live stream.
I got you IGN, food one
and
time.
And he got me shrimp fried rice or something like that. And I am allergic to shellfish. So
you and Duggan wanted like fur or something, but you didn't want soup. Say. So
yeah. Let's say.
Welcome to Podcast Unlocked Confessions Edition. It's Unlocked After Dark here on IGN.
Try and be nice.
Well, we are living in a little bit of a bizarro world because we'll just jump right in. It's 1 week and it's a drop in the bucket of the grand scheme of things. But as you've probably gathered from the headline and the thumbnail, if you're watching us on video this week, there was something happened this week that has almost never happened. And I thought we would start there. We do have plenty to talk about, not just this, but Xbox is outselling the PlayStation 5 in Japan. Yes, don't shake out your ear. There's nothing clogging it up. You did hear that correctly. Xbox is outselling PS5 in Japan for the past week. So Sony is being hit super hard by supply issues, and Xbox not as much. So this comes via Famitsu, who says that the Xbox Series console family sold just under 6,695 units during the last reporting period, which is 2 weeks ago, June 13th to the 19th. And in that same window, PlayStation 5 sold less than half of that, 3,035. While Sony remains far ahead of Xbox in terms of overall Japanese console sales, this marks the second time this generation that weekly sales have been significantly in Microsoft's favor. So, if you're curious as to the split, well, because since there are two Xbox Series consoles, both the Series S and the Series X outsold the PS5 for that week. It was almost, and the split between the two of them was almost 50-50. But both of them individually also beat that 3,035 PS5 number. So obviously this has a lot more to do with Sony having a much harder time on the supply side than Xbox is having, which, to be clear, you know, Microsoft deserves a ton of credit for seemingly doing a better job of managing the supply chain issues than Sony's doing and just getting more consoles out to customers who want them. But the PS5 still way ahead overall. If you're curious there, the numbers are 1.69 million PS5s thus far versus 232,000 Xbox Series consoles. And then just to set the ultimate level of context for this, to round out the full story, the Nintendo Switch, albeit with a three-year head start on the two next-gen consoles, the Switch has 24.7 million versus 1.69 million PS5s and 232,000 series consoles. Miranda, your reaction first to just, you know, again, we have the context. We know it's just one little window here, but it is still notable for Xbox anyway.
Yeah, it's a nice little, oh, cool. You know, Xbox is getting a little time in the spotlight. The reason I say it like this, because like I remember when I went to Japan several times for TGS and doing stuff for work. And every time I go to the game stores to go look at the Japanese video game guides, and I always walk by the Xbox section, and it's always so small. And I'm like, oh, hey, you know, but it just makes sense. You know, any sort of progress is good progress. And I know Xbox is really trying hard to make sure that they, I think, have different kinds of games that maybe also appeal more to the Japanese audience. But the numbers with the Nintendo Switch just make so much sense. I mean, with Japan, if you've never been, it is very much focused on portability. So as far as like mobile games and other things like that, those just make sense. Like a lot of commuting happens on trains. They have an excellent subway system. Like it's incredible. Like any train system you go, any railway system, it's just a delight to take. So because that there is so much public transportation, you have a lot more time to, you know, just sit on a train and play games. And you're not going to bring your Xbox Series X on the train, but you can bring your Nintendo Switch. So there's just a lot of reasons there that it makes sense. And I think, of course, the same thing with PlayStation. That's trailing behind as well. But we also know that's because of supply chain issue.
Yeah, mobile games are huge there, too, right, Miranda? Mm-hmm. I mean, not that they're not big everywhere, but it really is a you know, mobile gaming, whether it's on a Switch or on a phone, is just a very commonplace there, correct?
It's a thing. Yeah. I mean, just because, like I said, I think whenever I moved, especially out here to San Francisco, and I just wasn't driving because I could just take public transportation, you suddenly have so much more time to do something that's not getting yourself somewhere because you're just like passively waiting to get there. And so with that, you can take more time to play games or read books or whatever it may be. And in that case, with Japan having more of a focus on that public transportation rather than driving, you get more time to do mobile gaming. So.
Well, it seems like from that alone, welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat. The next Switch, Nintendo's not going to move away from this hybrid home and portable format anytime soon, I would imagine, right?
I don't think
there's
so.
There's no way. Yeah, there,
no
which,
reason to.
Which is fine. Yeah, it's, give us the Super Switch and we'll be happy. Stella, your thoughts on this little small victory for Xbox in a country that has for 20 years just evaded any amount of success for Xbox.
Yeah, I think Miranda brought up a good point about there being so many different games now on the Xbox. So for a while, when I was in high school, I remember the Xbox being synonymous with like FPS games, really high competitive games. And Xbox has come so much further than that now. And especially with Game Pass, with so many games being available, so many different things being available, and with the Xbox Series S, which is more portable and is smaller and takes up less space in your home, especially since some of these homes in Asia are a little bit smaller. People are living in smaller apartments. I used to live in one in Korea. It kind of just makes sense. And I'm not too surprised. Also, with the availability stuff, totally makes sense. You just want to play video games. So why not get the Xbox Series S, which is slightly cheaper? So. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it just makes sense.
You know, you remind me of a good point, Stella, or a notable thing. And we've heard that a lot about that part of the reason that Xbox has historically struggled. And it is a part, not the whole picture, but yeah. Part of the reason for Xbox's struggles in Japan over the years has been that the form factor that, you know, you pointed out, the smaller dwellings typically in Japan and Asia. Well, The PS5 is ginormous. It's like, so I wonder if that has like if that has anything to do. I mean, I'm sure it's 98% supply chain, but I wonder if there is any resistance to the PS5 just because it is such a just like a hulking tower of console back there. That's even bigger than heavier than the Xbox Series X, and certainly bigger than the Xbox Series S.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel right to lay it on its side. I know you can, but it doesn't feel right to do that either. You're just like, no, it was designed to stand up. So,
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Can't even lay on
its side. I feel the same way about the Series X. Like, I don't know anyone that lays it on its side. Do you?
No. Paris does.
Does anybody know anybody that...
Oh, no, Paris.
Paris Lily does.
Miranda? Wait, we can't see it in the shot.
It's
standing
up. It's right there. That's my Halo Series X. Sorry, I'm just like leaning all weirdly. But yeah, I have it behind me.
Yeah, I was standing. Yeah.
Stands tall.
Nobody lays it down.
No.
Destin, your reaction to this small but notable victory for Xbox in Japan.
Well, there's a lot to dive into here, actually,
yeah.
Because the Xbox Series X and S family of consoles has already outsold the entirety of the lifetime of the Xbox One console. in all of its iterations in Japan. So we're already like 100,000 units past that number.
A year and a half then, in versus what was it, 7 or 8 years for the 8 years for the Xbox One.
Yeah, and the lifetime for the 360, according to Wikipedia, as of February 26, 2014, had sold 1.6 million units. So I do think it is notable that we're already in the 200,000 plus unit number. Now, of course, the PlayStation 5 is selling much better. I believe, just looking at the Famitsu numbers, it's around 1.6 million or 1.7 million total versus 230,000 units for the Xbox. But the fact that Xbox is actually moving units in Japan, I think, is really, really interesting. And it means that Xbox has struck a nerve in this territory for the first time in a very, very long time in a positive way. They have a Japanese Xbox Wire, for example, a Japanese-focused translation for a lot of these games. And I think they are seeing the return on that investment in resources. There's also the separate conversation to be had about the semiconductor issue, Ryan.
Yeah,
we know that Xbox potentially paid to get some advanced access to those semiconductors to produce more units, and that could also be paying off as part of the strategy. But Sony has committed and said that they are going to be working towards producing more PlayStation 5s in the near future, with DigiTimes reporting that that should be clearing up later this year, and Sony doubling down and saying, we're working as hard as we possibly can to throw all resources at this issue because they want to move PlayStation 5s. They want it to sell better than the PlayStation 4. And Nintendo doesn't really have to do anything because they've sold 27 million units and they just absolutely dwarf either of the sales figures for Xbox or Sony, you know? The last thing I wanted to comment on was the size issue. I think the Series S was just a really, really smart option for Xbox, and I said it from the first I heard about that, I'm like, this is very smart. Most people, I'd say 90% of consumers, do not care about 4K, 120 hertz, all that stuff, right? That you know, I care about and a lot of consumers care about, but 90% of people that are going to Costco when they see that Series S sitting on the shelf, or wherever you go in Japan where the consoles are sitting, they just see that price point and they're like, next gen gaming at that price with Game Pass, I'll take it.
Yeah, I'm sure if we went back and pulled the old tape, I was probably against the Series S in the beginning. I'm sure Microsoft has proven me extraordinarily wrong. It really has paid off for them. It's turned into a brilliant strategy that I expect they'll probably continue in future Xbox generations. This high market, mid to lower end market within a console family, that strategy is probably here to stay. Destin, what you were talking about made me think of, like, isn't it crazy? This is for everybody to just chime in. Isn't it crazy how quickly the winds can change from console generation to console generation? Like, you look at the Xbox, just since the Xbox entered, it was this just giant literal PC in a box that did nothing in Japan, but it starts to get a reputation as I think Miranda noted about as this FPS box, and well-earned reputation. But then the 360 comes along and they manage to beat Sony to market, and the PS3 manages to kind of make some wrong decisions, like the whole $599 thing. The next generation, Microsoft just steps on all the rakes in the room over and over again, whereas Sony makes all the right moves. And now you'd think, okay, well, we've seen everything now. There's nothing we haven't seen in this business. And this current generation begins. And what do we see but something we've never seen before in the form of a global chip shortage that has materially impacted what Sony's able to do, and certainly what Microsoft's able to do. And it's been in a dark and unfortunate way, but it's been an opportunity for Microsoft to gain back some market share just by virtue of managing this chips crisis arguably better than Sony has. So yeah, I kind of just throw it out. Like, it's, there's a book to be written about this generation of consoles specifically, from, if you could talk to all the right people inside of both companies.
This week's Podcast Unlocked is brought to you by NordVPN. Hey, If you're watching a lot of sports like me and you hate blackouts, NordVPN is a great way to go. You can use NordVPN, a virtual private network, to watch live sporting events, TV shows, films that aren't available in your region by switching your virtual location to a country that is showing that event. No more blackouts. It's also good for plenty of other stuff, like protecting your private data, your bank details, your passwords, your online identity. You can protect your data while you're traveling and using public Wi-Fi. NordVPN protects you wherever you are in the world. NordVPN threat protection also protects you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. NordVPN is also the fastest VPN in the world. No buffering or lagging while you're streaming, and it will stop your ISP bandwidth throttling. NordVPN is the price of a cup of coffee a month, so that is a super affordable, great way to go. To get the best discount off of your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/unlocked without the E. That's nordvpn.com/unlocked, and that'll give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. And best of all, there's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. nordvpn.com/unlocked without the E. If you're looking to save some money on your wireless plan, take a look at Visible Wireless. They're a transparent wireless carrier with nothing to hide. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, where you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. One line wireless, just $25 a month with taxes and fees included. That's unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Switch now at Visible.com. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. Like Visible, the wireless company making wireless visible.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
I think Sony started this console generation very sure that they would be the market leader, right? And then when chip shortages happened, they had to change their tune on a lot of things.
Kind of doubling down on PS4 production, right? That was one of the things.
Yeah, so they extended PS4 production, which I believe they were going to end a little bit earlier, but they said, no, we're going to continue making that. They're releasing more and more of their titles on PC, which has been a large revenue driver for them. They revamped the PlayStation Now PlayStation Plus package. And based on what I've seen of the new PlayStation Plus changes, I think it's a very, very positive and smart change on their part. It's still not where Game Pass is, but they looked at what Game Pass and Xbox was doing with having titles on PC. They took their own angle with it, and it's been very beneficial to them and beneficial to gamers everywhere. Getting to play Spider-Man on PC is going to be awesome, you know, in the coming months. And I just think it's really, really cool that more and more of these titles that were formerly locked to PlayStation 5 have now gone everywhere the way that Xbox has done it. It makes me really happy to see, actually. And Jim Ryan has pointed out that he is very disappointed that these amazing experiences on PlayStation are locked to the PS5, and they aren't able to be experienced by more people. They're limiting their scope. So,
right, because Sony has traditionally just been their primary interest has been selling consoles. Whereas Microsoft has now opened it up and taken more of a PC-like approach and said, just wherever you are gaming, we want you in our ecosystem. And we've seen the results of that start to pay off already.
Makes me so happy. I think that the competition between Xbox and PlayStation, especially this generation, has forced Xbox to do some new innovative things. And Sony's taken note. They're like, hey, that's working really well. We need to offer our consumers something better. And that's why I love it when these two companies have to pivot and have to make changes, because the consumer wins at the end of the day when that happens.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that I think it's fair to say that both companies have made each other better. And by extension, it's better for us, because, you know, you're right that Sony have gone to PC And would they have revamped PlayStation Plus without the stuff that Microsoft's been doing? Like, you could make the case that maybe they'd have gotten there on the PC side eventually when they realized how much money they were leaving on the table. But I'm not sure that PlayStation Plus would have been materially improved the way it has. And you're right that on the Xbox side, you know, Microsoft has had to find a way to compete on exclusive games. And Microsoft's gone out and bought all these studios to strengthen their platform. So, yeah, like, it's more, you're right, Destin, it's more fun when they're both good and they're both pushing each other. Because last generation was only fun if you were a PlayStation fanboy, really. Like, the Xbox was
having a hard time
for the generation.
More resolution, fewer games, and
it was
like,
just a rough go. Yeah. And it was just so. I mean, what did the PS4 outsold the Xbox One by? Like, I think it was 4-3 or 4-1. It was a lot. So,
and
yeah,
it allowed Yeah, it allowed Sony to build a tremendously talented group of studios. I do feel like I'm talking a lot. So, Miranda or Estelle, if you want to jump in, feel free to, but I feel
like I'm learning just from listening to you. I'm just letting it flow. It's fine. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Rest in peace, Kinect. That's all I got to say. Yeah. I like the Kinect.
You know, Kinect did kind of live on in the form of Face ID. That's not literally, but like, it's the Kinect that works is the one in your iPhone.
Okay, so as someone who loved playing Just Dance and actually competed in the esports for Just Dance, I am so mad that they got rid of the Kinect. That was the most accurate body tracking, and there could have been so much more.
It was a great game.
There could have been so much more tech like actually done. There could have been so many cool games actually released for that, but it just didn't really work out. So they kind of just got rid of it, which I was very sad to see. Which is why I still have my Xbox One, and every time I play a Just Dance game, I played on that. So I'm just sad, but I'm not ready to let it go.
I can neither. Go ahead, Destin.
Oh, I was just going to say, I was just thinking about the sales numbers we're discussing. So this is the second time Famitsu has reported Xbox outselling PlayStation. So
in a week. On a weekly.
Well, no, in May, I believe in the last one was May. The last article that I have up here was from, well, that's June 23rd. And the other one was from May. It must have been the week prior, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. May 19th. So that's just interesting. Hopefully Sony can figure out whatever's going on there.
Yeah. Stella, there may or may not. I can neither confirm nor deny the existence of a video on YouTube of a bunch of the old official Xbox magazine crew at one of our houses that I appear in playing dancing to Dance Central. I can neither confirm nor deny.
Oh my God. That I need exists. That. I need that.
In fact, you're reminding me, like, I had one particular song that I like loved the dance for, and now I'm going to have to go look it up because I can't remember it off the top of my head. But yeah, that was Harmonix. Harmonix knows what to do when it comes to music games. But Stella, you said something else that I want to just double back on before we move on to the next news item.
Yeah.
And I think it was a really excellent point, and that is that Game Pass has been a really vital part of the newfound appeal of Xbox in Japan, because as you guys remember, Microsoft, they've made a concerted effort specifically in Japan before. And even though we got some great games out of it, it never moved the needle. You'll remember that kind of early-ish time in the 360 life cycle where they signed Mistwalker, we got Blue Dragon, we got Lost Odyssey, we got Eternal Sonata. I think there were one or two other excellent JRPGs that were exclusive to the 360 that really just never got it done. But Stella, you're right. And not that even Microsoft's making a specific effort to target Japanese gamers. They've just been making an effort to appeal to all gamers to have something for everybody with Game Pass.
Yeah, it's been really nice. I mean, obviously with PC also being included in Game Pass, it's great. But I mean, just having it on a console, I know console is just a lot easier, especially for families to get a hold of and also be able to share and play games together with. And Game Pass has a lot of stuff that you can actually do couch co-op with. And it's not just FPS and competitive stuff anymore. It's all these different curated playlists that you can try for free as long as you have the subscription, which is great. And all you need is a device. And again, the Series S. Why not?
Exactly. Exactly. So congrats to Microsoft on a small but notable victory. We'll see how it continues. Because it's not that I expect Microsoft to suddenly overtake Sony for second place in Japan, but it's the more ground it can gain, the better off, I think it'll be for everybody, in the sense that just it's more fun when there are three healthy competitors in every market. Whereas, there are certain markets where Microsoft just hasn't been a factor at all, and Japan's been the most notable of those.
Let's be honest. Nintendo's doing whatever they want. Nintendo doesn't care so much about these two.
And when it sometimes it doesn't work, like the Wii U. So it's for better and for worse that Nintendo marches to the beat of their own drum. Currently, it's working real well with the Switch. They've definitely hit on a great thing. Nintendo, you're right, will always, for better or for worse, march to their own beat. And that's, I applaud them for that, even in the times it doesn't work. Next up this week, Halo the Master Chief Collection may be getting microtransactions 8 years after it released. Yeah, we're coming up on the 8th anniversary of this collection already. It came out in fall of 2014. 343 has revealed that it's currently exploring adding microtransactions to Master Chief Collection, allowing players to purchase Spartan points, which are currently called Season Points, to unlock gear and customizations they may have missed. Quote, for players who are new to the Master Chief Collection or who may not have dedicated much time specifically to unlocking items during seasonal updates, or are simply completionists looking to catch the last outstanding items they need, we are internally exploring a potential new feature for the future in the form of purchasable Spartan points, said 343 in a blog post. We are happy with the current system of how players earn Spartan points by completing challenges and leveling up through play. This would be an optional additive alternative for players who might find the vast scope of content to be an intimidating amount of playtime and want to get ahead on or skip the grind, or maybe want to grab specific items they want, because we all have our favorites, end quote. Your thoughts on this? Destin, I'll go your way first.
Don't buy this. Don't support this. Stop saying microtransactions are okay. Because look at what Diablo Immortal just did. Oh. That's where we're headed if we keep saying, oh yeah, microtransactions are totally fine. I am very upset that they have decided to go this route, even though it is optional. You know people are going to buy it, and you know what game's coming next? Halo Infinite. They're going to test this with the Master Chief Collection, and then a few years down the line, they're going to see if it works for Halo Infinite and allow you to buy levels in the Battle Pass or something like that. I don't like this. I think it's been a slippery slope for years. Let me just finish my point. Sorry, Miranda. I think it's been a slippery slope for years in terms of microtransactions, and Diablo Immortal is like the pinnacle of where we're going to end up if we keep just being chill about this stuff. It needs to be handled better.
Miranda, go ahead.
But you can already buy things in Halo Infinite.
You can buy these skins for $10, and I also don't think you should purchase that. I don't think we should be supporting
the microtransaction system. Let me have my cat ears.
Oh, yeah. How much were your cat ears?
I don't remember, but I enjoy them.
That's it.
Okay. I don't know. Like, I agree that there has to be a balance to microtransactions. The thing is that you come after free-to-play games, which their model is entirely built on microtransactions. They need you to give them money so that they can keep making their game. So they want the money through cute things or cool things or flashy things, whatever that's going to be. And usually they're cosmetic, and that's what they should stick to. That's the problem, right? Is that we want these things to be through cosmetic, optional, extra fun, fluffy stuff, and not through anything that will actually impact gameplay. That's when it becomes the problem, especially for any game that has a competitive aspect. Some other games do this in a different way. So for instance, with Genshin Impact, which I play like a shit ton of, they are all free to play, but the way that you get, where they get money from their players, is by offering characters, but it's on a chance-based system. So you're not guaranteed a new character unless you invest a certain amount, and you can get that currency by playing the game, by completing certain event quests, but it's a kind of upped up to chance. There is a very defined system though for when you do unlock those characters, but there's a good chance that if you for sure want this character and you have not been saving or like optimizing how you get that premium currency, then like you might have to put in money. And I know a lot of people who don't put in any money at all and have like a really great team, and you can enjoy games without that. And I think that's the idea, right? If we have these free-to-play games that do ask for money, I want the like base system to be enjoyable without having to invest anything. Like there's a balance that needs to be struck. And I think honestly, I think free-to-play games are a good option for a lot of folks to get access to games that they may not have gotten to otherwise. However, the biggest ask is to make sure that these systems do not become predatory and that they do not break the base gameplay, especially if there's any sort of competitive aspect. I think that's what we should ask for.
So Diablo Immortal is a free-to-play game. The Master Chief Collection is not. It's on Game Pass, but it is not a free-to-play game. I think there's a distinction there. Stella, your thoughts on this?
I think it's weird. I think it's strange, especially since what you said, it's been like 8 years, right?
Yeah.
It feels like a weird move. And I understand that. I don't know if there are achievements for getting certain skins in the game and such, but I think it's just a weird call. I know that free-to-play games do need to have some sort of monetary service in order for them to keep operating. I feel like a lot of companies look at Fortnite and see how much money that they have been able to generate through their battle pass and through skins and collaborations. And they're just like, how can we emulate that? But sometimes it doesn't work out that well, and you have to formulate your own plan to match your game. Halo Infinite, I feel, currently has a lot more problems than just the microtransactions currently. And the base gameplay does not feel as fun to me anymore. And I think they need to focus on that. So the fact that they are looking at bringing back something from 8 years ago and putting in a monetary value in that when it's not really necessary feels a little strange to me. I think that it's optional. I know that it's optional and that's fine. But it does feel a little weird that that is being looked at instead of the current state of Halo Infinite. And yeah.
Miranda, please.
Sorry, I just wanted to say I agree. My distinction about discussing microtransaction with free-to-play versus not was mostly geared at like Halo Infinite. Obviously, Master Chief Collection does have a base game value that you have to pay for if you don't have Game Pass. So there is a distinction there. And there are many games that do require you to pay them for them and then also buy the characters. I'm looking at you, Overwatch, and I thought that was real shitty. But you know what? That's just how some of these games have. It's like an entry fee. And there's a lot of different, I think, like economies and systems you can look at as far as like, do they like pay for time, pay for microtransactions, just pay for the base game? And obviously, we all have our own preferences. I think the thing is, we always just have to look out for it being predatory. Whether or not Spartan points are a good idea, though, that's a different question, or I guess a different topic. Because for me, I'm like, why are you like, I'm glad that they are supporting Master Chief Collection, because I know people do play that online. People do still like jump around on the multiplayer, play the seasons. It's good to see them supporting it. However, we are all very aware that 343 has some things to work on with Halo Infinite. And I'm just like, hey, what about, I know you have to make money, but also,
what about co-op? What about the Forge?
Like, let me jump in now, because this is, you guys are getting it at where I
want
to go.
You can do two things at once. I understand that.
Well, it's, the thing is, you know, you might look at this and go, oh, well, it's been 8 years. If it's a cosmetic thing, is it that big of a deal? But for me, it doesn't really matter that it's 8 years old in this specific case, because it is, to me as a Halo fan, someone who cares deeply about Halo, it is vitally important that the Master Chief Collection be lovingly and respectfully maintained for literally as long as there is an Xbox platform, because these games, there are now six of them total in the Master Chief Collection, these games matter to Halo fans. They matter to people, and they will continue to be relevant as this sort of preserved, updated, refurbished versions of the games that kicked off the biggest franchise on the platform. So yes, it's 8 years old, but I think it's vitally important that Master Chief Collection be continually updated, maintained, cared for the next 8 years and the next 28 years, as long as Xbox exists. So that's where, you know, there are new people coming into the Xbox platform all the time. And so that's where I think you could potentially, you know, 343 is trying to pitch this in their statement as they're kind of talking to existing players, which makes sense. It's if you're reading the 343 blog, you already know and care about the game. But my expectation would be that these policies, these what they're proposing to implement here is kind of more aimed at the next 5 years of new Xbox players than the previous 20 years us of Halo players. And so that's where I would want to look at this is this fair? If I'm a new player coming in who's experiencing these Halo games for the first time, because I'm a new generation of gamer who wasn't around for Halo and Halo 2 and Halo 3, is this a fair system? And that it sounds like they're trying to make it one by making it something you can still get all this stuff through play versus through paying, but it remains to be seen how it'll turn out in practice.
So as one of those new gamers who has not been able to experience Halo and has been playing through the Master Chief Collection, I have no interest in buying anything. I am interested in the story. I'm interested in the core mechanics that I missed out on that everyone raves about as the classic like FPS game to play back in that era. I am only concerned about the quality and the gameplay and story from that. So I again, this is all optional and you can still earn everything through playing, which is great. That is a system that I feel is currently missing from Halo Infinite. So hopefully they can transfer that over to Infinite currently, because there's like even in Apex, there are some ways to even earn in-game credit that can be used to buy things from events and stuff that happen. But there's no system like that in Infinite currently. So that feels a little bit worse currently how it's sitting. But I have no interest in buying anything for the Master Chief Collection. So.
A quick note is that I do, unless I'm wrong, I thought they had said that they were looking into a system to implement like that so that you can earn premium currency, I think either through the Battle Pass or through other means. So I think that was something they had mentioned, but they have mentioned a lot of things. So
yeah, and it's not in the system currently, which feels bad, especially with the amount of cosmetics and stuff they have. So
now, Destin, you mentioned Diablo Immortal. I mean, Immortal.
No, you had it right the first time.
I had it right. It's hardly an original joke, but I've seen that all over the internet and understandably so. But no, Destin, in all seriousness, so, you know, I the thing about the gross microtransactions there and what I worry about, like, that's a mobile game. Yes, it's on PC, but where I totally empathize with your concern about this with Halo is that the younger generation of gamers, my own daughter included, have grown up kind of becoming accustomed to these mobile games, these free-to-play games, Roblox, all this kind of stuff that the kids play, where their entire reason for being is first and foremost to keep you in there and spending money. And second priority is hopefully you have fun. And that's where I turn and instantly turn into the old man yelling at the cloud. But I think I'm right on this, which I guess all old men yelling into a cloud think they're right. But, you know, when I was a kid, it was Nintendo games. Now, you can make the same argument, by the way, that we did have a version of this and it was called the arcades, where the games were designed to be fed quarters over and over and over again. But once the home console started to come into play, I would make the argument that games became more about designed pieces of art and entertainment than about monetary sinkholes. And I feel like I worry that now that we have this new generation growing up where they're just accepting these microtransaction practices in games like Diablo Immortal, Roblox, whatever it is, as normal. And so it's just going to normalize this. And it's just this kind of stuff is going to continue to bleed into our entire gaming industry.
The question seems like it has become, how can we add microtransactions as opposed to how can we add more content and generate revenue that way? Right. So that's why I worry that it's going to be a slippery slope. And then once this one works, they're like, okay, that worked. what else can we do that's going to further monetize the consumer?
How do we do this to Gears, Miranda? Maybe that's what happens next.
You guys, I have bad news. That's the reality we live in. That's like the new economic structure for games. Like, we can't forget that video games, it's a business. Entertainment is a business. Like, they want to make money, and people have to eat. So it makes sense. Like, but obviously
you can't eat off $250 million a year that Game Pass generates. Like,
I was about to say, gaming. You can't equate that, like, the money microtransactions make go directly to, like, the people who actually made the game. Like, that's not how it works, unfortunately. But I will say that there are swaths of games out there that don't have microtransactions. Yes, the bigger ones probably will look for the opportunities to have that. We've had a lot of cosmetics. Cosmetic microtransactions have been around for so, so long. Would I rather earn them for free? Absolutely. That is important. But I think it's more important to critically analyze and kind of relay the issues with microtransactions where we see them, and then celebrate the places where we see that as a better system. So that way, hopefully, developers will keep going toward doing the better things. And obviously, it's not the individual developer who wants to make a kick-ass game, and it's like the people above who say, hey, we need to have these things in our systems, so you need to figure out how this is done. And you just got to hope that you have the team behind them and upper management who stands behind their team to develop these systems in a good way that is not manipulative or gross. Like, you have to just hope for that. And I think we saw that with 343 when they did try to do it so that you could buy the battle pass at any time. It does not expire. They're really trying to advocate for a different system. And I think that's what we need to look for. So I know I keep talking about Genshin Impact, but that is like the biggest free-to-play game I play. And if you guys haven't seen that game, it is wild. It is so wild how much you get, how much quality stories you get for free. Like, you just, I don't even understand, but also I know why they can do that. And that's because of how their system is set up for financially, and that there are the whales out there. For if you guys don't know, in the free to play economy, a whale is somebody who essentially just dumps a shit ton of money into a game. Excuse me, I cursed. But it's somebody
the
who
third time this week, Miranda's fired up.
I'm sorry. Somebody who puts in a lot of money into a video game. And sometimes those are people who are pointed to as ruining the system because they have the financial resources just to dump in money, where a lot of other people can't sustain that. However, the way I see it, whenever I say pay for some stuff in Genshin Impact, I'm like, well, I'm paying for the free-to-play players. Like, that's fine by me because this game is incredible. But the problem does come about when we have these systems that are very predatory, that are limiting, and that generally hurt the community rather than just like make the community a little balanced. And I think that's the problem we're seeing with Diablo Immortal. I don't personally know the extent of what that is. So Dustin, if you actually wouldn't mind explaining a little bit more why those systems are seen as so bad, I think that would help for a lot of folks like me who aren't actually playing. I've only heard some people say it's overblown, some people say it's not, but I do know that we've had in the past with Star Wars where they did have like a system that impacted gameplay, and that was something that was, you know, widely critiqued, and honestly they had to course correct to make sure that their game stopped doing that. So there are instances where we, of course, like as media and then also as players, can say, hey, this system does not work for us, and it is not okay. And I think what people say also speaks loudly, even if there are those people who are dumping a lot of money in.
Diablo Immortal at the top tiers requires basically 5-star gems. And the 5-star gem is basically locked behind a loot box, for lack of a better term, where you randomly get rewarded for completing the rifts. So you have to consume those materials, you run a rift, maybe you get a 5-star gem, maybe you get a 2-star. And players have spent 10,000 real dollars and they've gotten like one. So it's very predatory and unfortunate, because there was a promise made to the consumer concerning Diablo Immortal where they said that wouldn't be the case. And it turned out that is exactly what the case was. There's been a lot of pushback. You can look on Google Trends and just see how quickly Diablo Immortal dropped off. So Blizzard needs to address that. And for me, that raises concerns about design decisions that are being made about Diablo 4. Are they going to have any system like that in Diablo 4? And I think a lot of the community is really concerned about that also. Now, the reason I use Diablo Immortal as the example, though, is because I just worry about where we're headed design wise, because it seems like you said, Ryan, they want to design games where you live in those games because you're That's more right. likely to spend money.
You play one of them. It's Destiny.
Yeah, it's Destiny. I haven't spent a cent in Destiny 2 in terms of microtransactions. Just I will buy the collector's edition, which includes all the season passes. And honestly, I think Destiny is a pretty good example of a way to continually support a game. They don't have a subscription fee. They have, I think it's like $10 per season, or you can get like even that at a discount if you get the major drops every season. And it has a ton of great story. Like this season in Destiny is really, really good. And you get a good value for your money. My main concern is when a story is falsely extended so that they can squeeze a few more dollars out, or gameplay is falsely extended, like Diablo Immortal, pushing you towards the microtransaction system. I play through Diablo Immortal, hit level 60, and I'm, I can't remember what it's called, but I'm level 1 after that, playing on Hell 1. And it's just like I have no desire to continue playing after that because I refuse to support their systems of seemingly pushing you to spend money in that.
You know, it's funny, as both Miranda and Destin were, both of you were talking about this, the game that instantly popped into my head of perhaps the shining example of how to support a game without milking players' wallets is No Man's Sky. Like, no, how many content updates? Yeah. What do they have, like 13 or like some crazy number of substantial updates?
Free.
That have been free every time. And I wonder if Hello Games had an all deciding, fully controlling corporate overlord, if it would have played out the same way. Hello Games is completely independent and they can do whatever they want. And so I guess even though we've kind of pivoted this almost away from Halo in a sense, but that's okay. This is, I think, a great conversation. A
larger conversation.
Yeah. The question I'll ask all three of you to end this particular topic is, while we're on the subject of Blizzard, because Blizzard's a Microsoft company in about 1 year from now, if regulatory signs off, they will officially be a Microsoft company in a year from now. And I believe it was Stella referenced Overwatch earlier. And I was going to talk about Overwatch next if we get time. We'll see. But you know, Blizzard, Activision and Blizzard, perhaps not coincidentally, given their corporate executive level reputation, shall we say, is seemingly one of the more frequent and egregious offenders of predatory microtransactions. In all seriousness, do the three of you think that when Microsoft takes over, will we see an obvious and fundamental shift in the approach to microtransactions from Activision Blizzard? Stella, I'll go your way first.
I feel like we're not going to see that much of a difference. I feel like Activision Blizzard has already been such a bad example of it. Like, they've already been doing their own microtransactions. Like, Call of Duty, they have had so many different blueprint guns that you could buy every time. And there are ways that you can earn it, but they're usually these challenges that take forever to get. So a lot of times I'm just like, oh yeah, I'll just buy it. But that gun often runs the meta in these Call of Duty games, especially in Warzone and stuff. So it's like, well, why wouldn't I just get it so I can have my loadout, especially if they run the meta. So that feels like, while it is mostly a free-to-play game, it still feels like a pay-to-win in certain seasons when the guns are extremely overpowered. So I don't know. I know that also you said we could go into Overwatch at some point, but we know that Overwatch 2 is also going to be free to play and there is going to be a battle pass system.
Yeah.
And it's going to feel a little bit weird. And yes, it's free to play, which is great. It is still cross play, but I feel like the battle pass system and the cosmetic store isn't too much of a surprise for me, just because I feel like Activision Blizzard has been participating in their own forms of microtransactions for years. And I don't think that's going to necessarily change just because of Microsoft. So.
Destin, do you agree?
About Microsoft changing?
Yeah. Do you think Microsoft will instill, will alter the behavior on these games of the microtransaction principles and processes.
Microsoft has largely taken a hands-off approach when they acquire studios to I don't know if that's a good thing or not, apparently not based on some of the stories that we've heard, but I would say no, because that seems to be their philosophy. I would hope personally that the answer would be yes, and that they figure out ways to just support these studios so they don't have to do questionable practices, right? But yeah, I don't know.
Sort of Miranda, Destin makes a good point that Microsoft has typically taken a hands-off approach on their acquisitions, but we've talked at length on this podcast before that when it comes to the culture of its employees and the culture of these companies, that Microsoft would be doing a grave disservice to the entire industry, but in particular, the thousands of employees at Activision Blizzard, if they don't take an active hand in actively changing the culture. So do you think that that change that we want and expect from Microsoft when it comes to Activision Blizzard will extend to the monetization practices that that company currently practices?
I would say that is still a little up in the air. Destin does make that point. And you, as you just said, Ryan, they have taken a very hands-off approach. But as you also said, that there are some things they need to acknowledge and help fix. And they would be doing that entire company a disservice if they didn't, I would say. And also, sorry, this little bug. I think overall, Destin made an excellent point about saying that he was worried about what practices are going to be put into Diablo 4 with how Diablo Immortal was treated. And that's an absolutely fair concern. And so if Microsoft gets his company, they have to, like, I guess, consider what are the other assumptions folks are going to be making about Activision Blizzard going forward, and do they have any responsibility to change that as one of their studios? So I think that's going to be a tough thing for them to navigate. And I think, if anything, I'm really curious to see what happens, because if they do change their stance on not being so hands-off, I think this would be the case where it's for a benefit of the consumer and probably for the studios themselves, rather than to just like let things remain as the status quo or how things were being run prior to being under the Microsoft banner, should that happen. So that's really what it comes down to. If there were a case when they step in, this would be a right time for that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Destin, you made a good point there also within that Diablo 4 mention, is that Diablo 4, unless it gets pushed again, and realistically, even if it does, it's Diablo 4 is coming out with zero Microsoft influence, because it'll be out before they're officially a Microsoft company. It's out in the first half of 2023. That is an Activision Blizzard game all the way. And so I think to echo Miranda, I think your concern for what we might see in the microtransaction department from Diablo 4, which, again, if you watched our live showcase post-showcase show, I've made it explicitly clear that Diablo 4 is one of my most anticipated games, not just of next year, but probably of the last 5 years period. I'm such a big Diablo fan. But I'm just being more overly optimistic, but I really do believe that Microsoft will have a meaningful and obvious effect on the microtransaction policies of Activision Blizzard once they take over, because Xbox is run by a guy in Phil Spencer who has continually, throughout his entire career, including the last now, actually Phil recently celebrated his 8th year as head of Xbox. It was March 2014. That he was named the head of Xbox. So in his 8 years, we've just continually seen him not just talk the talk, but walk the walk on not only gamer-friendly, gamer-first policies, but developer-first and developer-friendly cultures and workplace policies. So I think Microsoft is gonna change a lot of things for the better at Activision, and I hope so. I mean, we won't really see the effects of it for a while, because again, all these games that we're talking about, Overwatch 2 and Diablo 4, and obviously Diablo Immortal already being out, these are things that are of either finishing development or will be out by the time Microsoft takes over. So it could be some time before we really get a good idea of what the new Activision Blizzard looks like and whether it's the same as the old one or if it is meaningfully different. But I'm confident it will be. Let's stay on this for a second in terms of Blizzard. Stella, I'll go back to you. Overwatch 2, it is going to fully replace the original. And I know, Miranda, I know you've got thoughts on this, too. Overwatch 2 will fully replace the original Overwatch at launch. So during a Reddit AMA, Overwatch 2 director Aaron Keller confirmed that Overwatch 2 will replace the original live service when the game launches in October. He said, quote, when Overwatch 2 launches on October 4th, it will be a replacement for the current live service. So they're trying to keep all the players in one place, not fraction everything. But I want to hear, this is something, I think it's happened before, but it's definitely not common. It's pretty rare. Do you agree with this move, Stella?
I think it makes more sense than when they originally were like, oh, yeah, if you have Overwatch 1, you can totally play with people in Overwatch 2. But now that Overwatch 2 is going free to play, I mean, there's no reason to not have it. So I feel like it makes a lot of sense in that way. I do think that it is a little weird that they are calling it Overwatch 2 instead of just having it be, I don't know, Overwatch revamped or something, which, you know, games have done, like No Man's Sky. They didn't do No Man's Sky 2, right? So for me, that's the only part that's a little bit weird. Again, I'm very glad that people are going to be able to play crossplay with people on any platform, which is great. It is free to play, so a lot more people are going to have access to this game, which is interesting. But yeah, I don't know. I think this makes more sense than the original plan, which was to have two games out and kind of be giving support to both. So,
by the way, as IGN's resident FPS expert, what is your current hype level for Overwatch 2?
Okay. Let's see.
Well, that's not a great sign if you're
already, like, okay, well, here's the thing. So I feel that from everything that I got to talk to Aaron Keller, right? I did the interview for our Summer of Gaming segments. I do love that they are conscious of the mistakes that they made in Overwatch 2, or so it seems. They've answered every question that I've had about it, about maintaining that community aspect and being able to maintain, what is it called? Proper output of content, because Overwatch suffered from a major lack of content for so long. So many people dropped off from it. A lot of the character reskins and stuff were just lackluster. It does look like with this new customization system, which, like, there's a new skin that's above legendary, that's more customizable and stuff. It does look promising, and they've actually released a roadmap, which is great. So I am tentatively optimistic. I fell off of Overwatch a long time ago because of the lack of content and because of the lack of support it seemed to have. So with them launching Overwatch 2, it seems like they are taking the proper steps in repairing that relationship with the community that has been missing for so long. But I'm still like, well, this is still the same. These are still the same devs that managed to make Overwatch less playable and less fun because of the lack of content and updates. So we'll see. I mean, it feels like the launch of Overwatch 1, which is great. Their interest is high, but can they maintain that? So,
Miranda, let me go to you now for not only an Overwatch 2 hype check for you personally, but your thoughts on Overwatch 2 being not a file save as Overwatch2.exe, but just a file save and overwriting the whole thing.
If I'm going back to a free-to-play first-person shooter, I'm going back to Apex Legends and not Overwatch. But like, if I have the time somehow, that's where I'm going. That's where I want to spend my time. Overwatch was fine. Like, I know people really love it for a lot of reasons, and I understand those, but it wasn't really for me. I've never really been a big fan of Blizzard games, and this one was just like, I dabbled, it's fine. I will say that with this change from Overwatch to Overwatch 2, I think there is a concern initially. It's like, okay, but what about everyone who paid for Overwatch and, like, spent money here already? Like, what do you get if this is just rolling into the same thing? There is a Founders Pack with a really ugly Sombra skin, and I'm so sorry for whoever designed it, but why would you make Sombra a jester, and why would you include that in your Founders Pack? There's nothing celebratory about this. It just makes, I mean, it's a jester. You're literally calling them clowns. What are you saying here? Okay. That's just kind of me being goofy, but also it's a little weird. The other epic sim is a general Doomfist, which is fine. You get an icon and some other stuff, but I'm glad that there is some benefit to, oh, you've been sticking around with us, so please have this Founders Pack. Like, you get like a special icon to say, oh, I was here first kind of thing. Cool. But overall, yeah, as everyone has already said, it just makes sense that these are getting rolled into the same thing. It'd be silly for them to be split, but also, I don't know, like maybe make these skins a little bit more celebratory or something fun.
Just a little in, weird. In what is currently a fairly light fall in terms of big AAA games, you are not keen to jump into Overwatch, it sounds like.
Oh, no. No, absolutely not. Sorry, I don't know. Like October has a lot of stuff coming out.
There is a lot, generally. Actually. Yeah,
yeah. There's quite a bit coming out this fall, except for in November. There's literally two games, but one of those games will take up my entire November, so it's fine. It's Pokemon.
Destin, how about you on your thoughts on Overwatch 2, on their decision to just kind of effectively overwrite Overwatch 1?
Doesn't need to be called Overwatch 2. It makes no sense. It makes less and less sense the more announcements that come out about this game. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Did Destiny 2 do the same thing with like folding in Destiny 1 content, or was that just like some of the raids?
Destiny 2 has added a lot of the stuff from Destiny 1, but the engines are significantly different.
Like, can you still play Destiny 1? Is that a viable thing? Yeah, okay. All right, so they didn't... So
a full, complete game with all the finalized content.
Because I was trying to think before we came on this episode, if this has ever happened before, where like a major sequel has just like completely consumed, just eaten its original game. And Left 4 Dead came to mind. Even though I think Left 4 Dead 1 technically still exists, but Valve did port all of Left 4 Dead 1 into Left 4 Dead 2 and make it available there. So there's effectively no reason to ever go back to Left 4 Dead 1. I can't think of another example other than that one. That was the only one that came to mind.
Yeah, I can't think of anything.
I can only think of like reboots. So yeah. For instance,
yeah,
Final Fantasy 14, that got like a big old...
That's a good one.
Meteor crash, but they didn't make a new game out of it. They just said,
that's right,
We're here still. It's just different now.
Yeah, it's better now. Things are better.
Yeah.
And it worked. It was totally way better. All right. Xbox games with gold for the first half, or for all of July, I should say, not just the first half. So we have something I confess I've not heard of. Beasts of Maravia Island. That is going to be available all month long. Relicta, another game I haven't heard of, starts in the middle of the month and runs through the first half of August. And then two games I have heard of, Thrillville Off the Rails, for you theme park fans. That's going to be the first half of July. And probably I don't want to necessarily say the best one in this list because it's the one, but it's the one I know best and I know it's good. The original Torchlight is available from the 16th to the 31st. Of July there. So if you still got your gold account and any of those four games appeal to you, be sure to download them in their respective windows while they are free. Next story this week, DICE, Battlefield 2042's developer, says they have no plans to make non-Battlefield games anytime soon. As DICE continues to work through Battlefield 2042's troubles, DICE's VP, Rebecca Coutaz, says told GameIndustry.biz that any projects not related to Battlefield are totally on the back burner. Quote, "We are only focusing on Battlefield 2042, she said. There is no time for anything else, and this is what we want to do. In 3 years, we want to be the first-person shooter powerhouse that DICE deserves to be, and that is what we are going for." Stella, I'll go back your way again. You did our Battlefield 2042 review.
I did.
I think, like me, you are also a Mirror's Edge fan. Yes.
Yeah, that's what. As soon as you said this, I went and looked, and I was like, no, because Mirror's Edge 2 was such a great revamp of the original. But man, it makes me really sad because I feel like that sort of a game would be really good for EA right now. Oh, yes. Battlefield 2042 recently had a major update, and they are going to have a battle pass system and everything, which is great for them. I mean, I think that it's interesting. People that I've talked to, they always say, well, to be fair, Battlefield games always get better over time after release. And I'm like, you know, that's great. But what about all these other games that do need some attention? I mean, Battlefield is probably EA's one of their biggest games, right? But I'm like,
no doubt.
What about Mirror's Edge 3? What about other games that people might be looking into? I mean, there are so many other games that they could be focusing on as well. But I mean, I guess maybe they just want to make sure that Battlefield 2042 is in a good place before they move on. But it's interesting because their roadmap that they released with their update information, it goes into, I think, fall. So some of the updates won't even be applied till like October or something like that.
Destin, your thoughts on DICE completely singling down on Battlefield? Not anything they have cooking is not happening. That's if it doesn't have the Battlefield name on it.
Take a break. Battlefield 2042 launched in a terrible state. If you're going to focus on Battlefield, make sure the next one doesn't launch like 2042 did. I don't know what's going on over there. I think 2042. Looks really pretty, but the community largely pandered the game. So you're not hitting the right beats with Battlefield. Battlefield has actually gone free to play, I believe, was the most recent story. So
I know they dropped their 128 player mode, right? And so they like actually got rid of a game mode.
Yeah, if you're going to double down on this franchise, take the time that it needs to launch in a competent state, because you're not doing yourself any favors by launching the way Battlefield 2042 did. And if you continue to do that, as I believe the last two Battlefields have been pandered, you're just going to do irreparable damage to the franchise.
Miranda, I know you like to play certain shooter franchises with your dad. Is your dad a Battlefield guy? Or
my dad is actually a huge Battlefield guy.
That's I think what he I still thought. Plays. Yeah.
Does he? I think he still plays Battlefield 4. Is that even still online? I don't remember which one he plays. He does not play 2042. He just looked at it.
I think 5 is still alive. Yeah.
Okay. It's either 4 or 5, which I was like, I think he still plays 5, but I remember he played the heck out of 4 so much. But yeah, it's probably 5, which makes most sense. That was 2018. Yeah, that's all I know about it. Thanks, Dad. Oh, I mean, that and of course, like the general consensus that 2042 did not launch in a very good state. Like, I know some things about it, of course, but beyond that, I just know that the community that does really like Battlefield, which includes my dad, is they don't want it yet. So honestly, I think it makes sense that it's like, oh, everything else is on the back burner so they can focus on improving Battlefield 2042 is probably what I'd want to hear if I cared about Battlefield. But
And well, I can't help but think of the team there a bit in the sense of, you know, we've heard this thrown around about a few Xbox developers. You know, we hear, oh, well, you know, what's it like working on 343 if you just know you're working on Halo in perpetuity for the rest of your life as long as you work there? And the Coalition with Gears and Turn 10 with Forza. It's like, here DICE is straight up saying, at least DICE, the main DICE in Sweden, is saying, we're not going to be making anything else. So if you're a developer there, I guess you've got to really care. I mean, of course you really care anyway, but yeah, that would be a little strange to me as a developer, just knowing that as soon as you finish one Battlefield project, you're just going to roll right into the next one.
Well,
like at least go ahead.
Sorry. Miranda. There was a clarification that it was just Battlefield 2042, not necessarily that they won't do anything else.
Right. True. But I don't know. I'm not optimistic that we would ever get a Mirror's Edge 3, as much as I hate to make Stella sad by saying that. But it's the Catalyst, I don't think, did that well. And that was like a miracle that we got that game. I wasn't quite as high on it as you, Stella. I think the first one is a billion times better than I had some problems with the second one, but I was still glad it got made. But yeah, I hope that at some point DICE is able to, you know, do something that isn't a Battlefield game even at all, like just do another project, because they are clearly a talented team, both in the technological sense and in the gameplay sense. The good news, we do know, like for me, I want single player games and single player first person shooters. We do know that Marcus Leto's new studio in Seattle that he's set up with EA, they're making a single player Battlefield game. So maybe that's a Bad Company 3. Maybe that's just a totally new thing. But we are going to get something on the single player side from Battlefield, even if DICE Sweden is understandably busy just trying to continue to do, you know, foundational upgrade work on getting 2042 into a good place. Next this week, yes, there's more. It's a busy week here. Tony Hawk himself has confirmed that Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4 remake was planned to follow in the wake of the 2020 Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2. But the project died following Activision's decision to officially merge the developer of the project, Vicarious Visions, into Blizzard. So Tony himself talked about this on a Twitch live stream with Andy Gentile, who is a former Neversoft designer who also served as the senior designer on the 1 and 2 remake. And Tony said, that was the plan. Even up to the release of 1 and 2, we were going 3 and 4. And then Vicarious got kind of absorbed, and then they were looking for other developers, and then it was over. According to Hawk, the project went no further. Quote, the truth of it is that Activision were trying to find somebody to do 3 and 4, but they just really didn't trust anyone the way they did with Vicarious, so they took other pitches from other studios. Like, what would you do with the Tony Hawk Pro Skater title? And they didn't like anything they heard, and then that was it. He says, I wish there was some way to bring it back. I mean, who knows? Maybe when all the dust settles, we'll figure it out. You never know. I would have never imagined that we were going to do 1 and 2 20 years later. Destin, your thoughts on this one?
I like Tony Hawk. I wonder how well those remakes ended up selling, though, because is there
they
still
were very critically acclaimed. They reviewed very well.
Yeah, but is there still a massive audience for Tony Hawk games? I know a lot of people out there reacted to this saying, I would love to play Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3 and 4. But if the economics don't make sense, maybe it's just like not the right time, especially if Activision or whoever is just saying we didn't really like any of the ideas that we heard. Then do you really want a bad Tony Hawk? I certainly wouldn't.
Stella or Miranda, any fond memories or thoughts on Tony Hawk wanting it to come back or letting it just letting it be?
I was never into the games. I watched my friends play it and they loved it, but I was never in that community. I didn't really feel an interest in it, but I know that these games are a classic for a lot of people, but I don't know if that being a classic and that I don't know if that audience is still alive for these games right now. So.
Hey. Oh, go ahead, Miranda, please.
I'm not that old.
I'm still alive. I'm still breathing, I guess. I played so much of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, and I loved it very much as a kid. But I could see these probably just making the wave back again at some point, even if it's not now. I think they'll come back again. People love the series, and I think there's that big bubble about Skate coming back as well. So I think we're just going to, you know, probably see it eventually.
Yeah, I'm with you on this, Miranda, because I think when Microsoft takes control of Activision in a year from now, I would not be surprised if they take another look at this. Not even if it's not with an Activision Blizzard studio, they might look at one of their other teams and say, hey, who might be a good fit for this? Because again, the 1 and 2 remake was very well received, and even if they don't want to just do a remake. Like a totally new game could still work. You mentioned the new Skate game that's, I guess, probably still early in development at EA because it was only, you know, announced in the weirdest of ways 2 years ago, a long time ago, over a year for sure. Yeah, it's been a while. But maybe like, you know, you look at kind of the way games are now, and Microsoft's looking for Game Pass content. You know, what if they make a totally new Tony Hawk game? They find the right developer for it that is like a, you know, design your own park, design your own level. And it's more of a social, like multiplayer thing that could just kind of live on month after month after month with a lot of user generated content, and you know, be something that fed into the Game Pass subscription. So I'm with you. I think it'll come back, and I hope it does. All right, we are nearly done with this week's episode of Podcast Unlocked. Which podcast am I on? I don't remember. I lose track. I do too many podcasts. But this week's Unlock Block Trivia, the question comes from Philip Rutherford, who asks, in 2006, the Xbox 360 Vision camera was available as an accessory. Which game also released that year allowed you to take photos of yourself and then use them to make your multiplayer character look like you? Was it Rainbow Six Vegas, Fear, Call of Duty 3, or Tiger Woods PGA Tour 07? Let me pull up the scores here as the three of you think about this for a minute. I know the score. Yeah, that's right. Destin got it last week to tighten things up, I think. Oh. Where are we at? We have Miranda 6, Stella 5, Destin 3. So it's a reasonably close race. Let me go Destin's way first then, since he is currently trailing in the...
Because I know the answer.
All right, well, I'll go to Stella's. Stella's way.
You could have just not said that and then guessed.
I got my answer locked in. I can send it to you, Ryan.
That's all right. Just hang on to it.
I feel like D makes the most sense, but maybe that's like a red herring. I don't know, but I'm going to go with D.
Okay, Tiger Woods. It definitely had a potent character creator. I will tell you that. I played that game. So it's, you know, there's just cause for you choosing that one. Miranda?
I'm between two, but I'm also going to guess D, Tiger Woods, PGA Tour 07.
All right, riding or dying with Stella on this one. So, Destin, what have you got?
I'm 90% sure it's A, Rainbow Six Vegas. The only way I'd be wrong is if it was Rainbow Six Vegas 2, not 1.
So you are going with Rainbow Six Vegas?
Yes.
That's a good move because you are absolutely correct. Yes.
Some of the photos of how bad this was were pretty good. Were pretty funny. This is a big story when it happened.
Not to mention the South Park episode that hit around there with Ass Face Kenny.
Yeah.
And you can kind of picture what people did with that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Have you seen our thun? That was that might bring back some memories for you South Park fans.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Rainbow Six Vegas was the correct answer. Oh. You could scan your face and apply it to your multiplayer.
Sounds character. Horrific. No.
Vegas was also a very good game.
It sure was. That was excellent cover shooter, tactical shooter.
You could jump off side of buildings and turn upside down and like shoot upside down.
Oh yeah, repelling.
Well, nobody had done that. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was great. Those were good times. And then after Vegas 2, Ubisoft forgot that Rainbow Six Vegas was that Rainbow Six was awesome, and then they didn't make another one for like 15 years.
Till Siege, Siege,
yes, in 2015. Thank you, Philip Rutherford, for that excellent Xbox trivia question. And if anybody else out there has an excellent Xbox trivia question of their own, feel free to send it in. You can address it to me at unlocked@ign.com. Include the question, include 4 multiple choice answers, and then please note the correct answer in your email. Don't forget your name and, if you'd like, your gamer tag as well. That will bring us to the end of Podcast Unlocked 550. Stella, you got anything you want to promote?
Yeah, I guess for work, I'm going to be doing a feature for the Outriders World Slayers, so keep an eye on that for this week. So that's going to be fun. But yeah, if for anything else, for like personal stuff, I mean, I'm at Parallax Stella everywhere. I do stream on Twitch every day after work. So yeah, I'll probably be playing the Overwatch 2 beta. So yeah.
Nice. Destin?
It has been a very exciting few weeks of finalizing budgets and training new hires. You can keep an eye out for all that to hit IGN very soon. If you want to hear me ramble, you can do that at youtube.com/thedestinchannel and order some cookies. LeGaryBakery.com. I'm back. We're making cookies for people, and I think people really like them. So Stella can attest to that.
Kind of.
Still his boyfriend can, because that's yeah, what thanks, we just Joel. Heard before the show. Yeah,
that calling you out on Unlocked. Thank you for eating all the cookies. Anyways.
Well, I can second that. The vegan cookies are excellent. Thank you, Destin. Those were definitely well worth the price of admission. Miranda.
Well, now that I want a cookie, especially for all the other management hard work that I've also been doing with budgets, that's kind of been a lot of behind the scenes stuff right now. But I'm sorry, have that actual Redfall interview up this week. It is very long. Ooh. It's over 5,000 words right now, and I'm trying to cut it down because it's just mostly going to be a Q&A just because he goes really in depth with his answers, and I'm trying to make it as readable as possible. So it's taking a little bit of time, but it should actually be up this week.
Excellent. As for me, I'm on Twitter at DMC_Ryan. My public service announcements are don't feed your dog grain-free dog food because they could get a wicked heart disease, and I don't wish that on anyone's dog. And wear sunscreen so that you don't have to get your head cut open and get skin cancer taken out. So that's all I got. You can follow me on Twitter at DMC_Ryan. I want to thank Miranda, Stella, and Destin, as well as our super producer, Alan, this week. Be well, everybody. This was Unlocked 550, and we'll see you back here next week.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nail, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.